tried to get this authorization before and Congress has not passed it. You're not allowed to then move forward with the regulation to do what Congress won't allow.
Senator Sullivan objects to an EPA regulation to reduce carbon emissions. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, February 11th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Little Diomede has gone nearly 3 weeks with no air service.
Our store, it's pretty bare. We do have a bunch of food here at the school.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Wells Fargo, extending its support of Alaska residents beyond banking by supporting the programming of public radio throughout Alaska, giving back to the community. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far.
Want to know more about how you and your family may get help buying health care coverage or avoid a tax penalty? Go to getcoveredak.org or call 211. This message sponsored by the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium, a nonprofit health organization.
In the U.S. Senate today, the Environment and Public Works Committee took up a controversial plan by President Obama to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. The EPA program would require a 30% reduction in carbon dioxide from power plants by 2030. Republicans call it federal overreach, and Alaska Senator Dan Sullivan had more objections than time allowed. APRN's Liz Ruskin reports.
Each senator at the hearing had 8 minutes to confront EPA clean air boss Janet McCabe. Some questioned the point of reducing U.S. emissions if China and India aren't lowering theirs. Others raised home state details they say make the regulations impossible. Alaska's Dan Sullivan, when it was his turn, challenged the Obama administration's authority to regulate CO2 emissions from power plants.
You've tried to get this authorization before and Congress has not passed it. Then you're not allowed to then move forward with the regulation to do what Congress won't allow.
Sullivan likened it to the president's executive action on immigration and Obama's quest for a wilderness designation in the Arctic Refuge. He quoted from a Supreme Court opinion scolding the EPA for overreach in another clean air program, and Sullivan tried to get McCabe to acknowledge a parallel.
Do you think that this regulation dramatically expands your authority?
I do not.
You don't?
I don't. I don't. I believe that we are following what the Clean Air Act requires. This is a statute that Congress enacted to protect the public health from air pollution.
The Supreme Court, McCabe says, has upheld the EPA's authority to regulate carbon emissions. Sullivan didn't get into specifics about how the regulation would apply in Alaska, but the senator implied bad stuff ahead.
Mr. Chairman, my time has expired. I have several additional questions that I'll submit for the record, particularly as it relates to interior Alaska communities such as Fairbanks that pay enormously high energy costs and are going to be severely, severely negatively impacted by this rule.
In Alaska, the proposed emissions rule would apply only to power plants on the grid, and it's easy to see why Fairbanks would feel it's in the regulatory crosshairs. The Fairbanks utility relies on coal and oil for about 60% of its power supply. The CEO of Golden Valley Electric has already warned of higher rates if it has to install emissions-reducing equipment to satisfy the mandate. But that may not be necessary, says ex-Alaskan Michael Tubman.
It'll be completely up to the state as to where they want to put their resources, how they want to make those reductions.
Tubman worked on energy issues in the state of Alaska's D.C. office for a string of governors from Knowles to Palin. He's now a senior fellow at the Center for Climate and Energy Solutions, a Washington-based think tank formerly known as the Pew Center for Global Climate Change. The power plant rule sets a reduction target for each state. Alaska's is 26%. Tubman says the rule doesn't require changes at each power plant, but would leave the state free to write its own plan.
It could choose to reduce emissions from coal and natural gas plants, or it could decide to build more renewable energy. It could decide to institute an energy efficiency program and get most of the reductions that way.
Reductions in CO2 that have come since 2012 will count toward the state's target. Tubman says modernizing the Rail Belt transmission grid could be a big source of carbon savings. Alaska has considered that for years to save money and improve reliability, but the price tag is about $1 billion. Tubman points out the rule isn't final yet.
I think Senator Sullivan's position on the Environment and Public Works Committee really offers him an opportunity to have EPA look at their proposal and look at it from an Alaska lens and perhaps make some changes that are advantageous for the state.
Tubman suggests Sullivan might ask to expand what counts as carbon reduction to include off-grid sources like new wind generators in diesel-dependent rural Alaska.
That might allow the state to reduce its emissions at the same time as achieving some other policy goals.
The EPA hopes to issue final rules this summer, with state compliance plans due a year later. In Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
The only aircraft flying to one of Alaska's most remote communities has been down for maintenance for nearly 3 weeks, leaving residents of the Bering Strait community of Little Diomede with empty mailboxes, bare grocery store shelves, and no way on or off the island. KNOM's Matthew Smith has more.
Andrea Okbialik works at the Diomede School, and on Tuesday, she was escorting kids to lunch. The kids were eating alongside classmates, but also other members of the community, parents and aunties and grandfathers. That's because no mail or cargo deliveries have come into Diomede since January 22nd, about 3 weeks ago. That's left store shelves empty, and with no checks coming in the mail, wallets are thin and essentials are hard to come by.
Our store, it's pretty bare. We do have a bunch of food here at the school, which will last for a while.
The Diomede School has opened its doors, serving nearly 300 lunches and dinners to Diomede residents since Saturday. But even with the school sharing its food, Okbialik says for mothers with young babies, no new stock on the store shelves means there aren't many alternatives.
In our home, I think the hardest part is having milk for the babies. It is hard when there's no milk, though, and when you've switched your baby to regular canned milk, to whole milk, to non-fat milk, to 2% milk, and then to non-fat milk again, and then now to powder milk. It upsets the baby's stomach, and a couple of us are going through that right now.
But the needs go beyond the right food on the shelf. Over the weekend, an Army National Guard Black Hawk helicopter had to be dispatched to medevac a pregnant 18-year-old from Diomede to Nome's Norton Sound Regional Hospital. While on the ground, the Black Hawk crew and the four medical providers on board were alerted to a 2-month-old with an airway issue. The infant was medevaced to Nome as well. Diomede's remote location means there are few options when it comes to passenger and freight service to the island. Its unique geography, set along the shore of an island that's basically a mountain jutting sharply from the Bering Sea, means there's no runway, save for the occasional ice runway that can be carved into the sea ice in winter. That leaves just one company, Oregon-based aircraft operator Ericsson Aviation, to provide helicopter service to Diomede. Flights paid for with nearly $340,000 of subsidies from the Federal Department of Transportation and the Bering Strait regional nonprofit COERIC. The subsidy keeps the service running under the Essential Air Service program set up back in 1978. Ericsson's program director Chris Schultz says the company only keeps a single helicopter, a twin-engine Bokau BO-105, for service to Diomede. And that helicopter has been down in Anchorage for routine maintenance since the last flight to the island on January 22nd. Schultz said yesterday that the craft should start flying again this week.
Well, we've had some maintenance on the aircraft, but the goal is to return it to service in the next 1 to 2 days. Pending weather, it will return to Nome and begin operations as soon as that's complete. Make sure that our aircraft are at the top condition before we begin flying passengers and cargo again.
Ericsson also contracts with the U.S. Postal Service for weekly mail service to Diomede. COERIC says the contract requires Ericsson to make a certain number of trips each year, but otherwise allows the company to set its own schedule when it comes to flights, as well as stoppages for weather and repairs. This isn't the first time Diomede's been without flights. Ice runways have been more and more unpredictable in recent years, and before the EAS flights started in 2012, there were 2 years with no winter runways and the only air travel was for mail, a time those who organized the EAS application refer to as a crisis. In Nome, I'm Matthew Smith.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Lance Mackey mushes through tough conditions on the Yukon Quest.
My fans, my friends, people like that, they might understand, but my dogs, they don't. You know, we started this, we're going to do everything we can to finish it.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Condor Airlines, with nonstop service from Ted Stevens International Airport to Germany and beyond. More information available on condor.com. Condor, born to fly.
ANSEP, the Alaska Native Science and Engineering Program, gives Alaska Native students the inspiration and opportunity to excel in science and engineering careers, building a sustainable future for Alaska. More at ANSEP.net. This message sponsored by ANSEP.
Governor Bill Walker has announced that on Friday, he will drop his Point Thompson lawsuit against the state and instead try to address his concerns with the settlement through legislation. It's exactly what legislative leaders have been calling on him to do, but the way Walker went about it perplexed some of those same lawmakers. APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez reports.
The House Resources Committee was scheduled to get an overview on the Point Thompson case on Wednesday afternoon. Bill Walker had filed the lawsuit when he was a private citizen in 2012. The litigation argued that a settlement between the executive branch and Exxon concerning the development of North Slope natural gas reserves violated state regulations. But now that Walker is governor, Republicans in the legislature have questioned the propriety of having Alaska's top official suing the state. The Resources Committee had invited the Department of Law to testify on Point Thompson. So it was a surprise when they got the governor himself.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you very much for an opportunity to present to you today. I'm here to talk about the Point Thompson lawsuit, which I brought several years ago as a public interest litigant. I want to talk to you directly, and I would like to set the record straight on that litigation.
First, Walker reviewed the history of the lawsuit. Then he said he would drop the lawsuit upon filing legislation to change the way the state deals with oil and gas settlements. And after 7 minutes of testifying, he said thank you, stood up, and walked out of the committee room, leaving some members stunned.
Representative Hawker?
I thought our understanding with the governor was we'd have a chance to ask questions of him before he departed our committee.
After taking a brief at ease to collect themselves, the committee came back to order and tried to parse Walker's statement. As that was happening, the governor's office announced a press conference on Point Thompson would happen within the hour. When Walker met with reporters, he said he had not seen the specific legislation his office plans to introduce, but that it would not be voluminous. He added that he was tying the dropping of the lawsuit to the bill's introduction rather than its passage because he did not think it was appropriate to pressure the legislature that way. If lawmakers do not pass the legislation, Walker said that would settle the matter.
Well, I've done all I can.
One of the questions from reporters was why Walker would not take questions from legislators. Walker responded that he had concerns about the fact that the lawsuit was still pending, and he noted that a press conference was a fundamentally different venue from a committee hearing.
It could be an awkward situation from the standpoint of this. I mean, strong believer in separation of powers between me as an individual and as governor and their role as the legislature. So I was sensitive to that and didn't think it was appropriate to stay and answer questions.
The last time a sitting governor spoke directly before a committee was in 2007, when Sarah Palin testified on an ethics bill. In Juneau, I'm Alexandra Gutierrez.
The CEO and board president of the Alaska Aerospace Corporation were before the Senate Finance Committee this morning making a pitch, not so much for funding, but for the opportunity to move on. CEO Craig Campbell even raised the possibility of taking the state-owned corporation private. He said there is little, if any, interest in the aerospace industry to buy the Kodiak Launch Complex currently, but sees a way where it could be attractive in the future.
What I'm suggesting with the privatization is probably going to be a hybrid where the company's divided out so that the operations side can go develop business that utilizes Kodiak Launch Complex, and then as a package at some point in the future, we'll determine whether there's value in any significant interest that could make it a return to the state that is worth selling.
Campbell admitted that with a dearth of launches, an Army rocket that exploded on liftoff in August and no launches scheduled for this year, Alaska Aerospace may have hit bottom. But he says with diversification beyond reliance on sending rockets into space, the corporation is rebounding. Wasilla Senator Mike Dunleavy said the low oil prices makes funding marginal projects much more difficult.
Bottom line, and I'll just end with this, we've got to be able to make a decision. You have a board, we're one of your investors. People of Alaska are looking at this and they want the economy to be diversified too, but what we're getting is we've got to separate our hobbies from our money-making ventures.
Alaska Aerospace Corporation is one of six big projects that Governor Bill Walker has put on a financial freeze. With lawmakers reviewing the state budget for cuts, Chief Justice Dana Fabe made the case for preserving the judicial branch's funding in her annual speech to the legislature.
The court does not control the number or types of cases that come before us, or which charges will be brought or tried, but it is our responsibility to resolve all of them as promptly, thoroughly, and fairly as we can.
Fabe specifically addressed the importance of keeping a judicial presence in rural Alaska and the value of letting litigants face trial in their home regions.
This will likely be our greatest challenge, to resist the financial pressures to centralize our operations in the hub communities and insist that Alaskans come to those hubs for justice or do without.
In the state of the judiciary, Fabe also said the court is reevaluating the way it approaches child custody cases to better accommodate litigants who represent themselves.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Alaska Pipeline Service Company, Alaska's pipeline to the future, delivering oil today, sustaining operations for tomorrow. If you're not covered by health insurance, you may be eligible for financial help with monthly premiums and out-of-pocket expenses. Open enrollment ends on February 15th. Sign up at healthcare.gov. Last year, 88% of Alaskans who enrolled received financial assistance. Compare plans and see if you qualify for financial assistance. Call 211 to get free local help. Visit getcoveredalaska.org for more information. This message sponsored by Ashna, a partner of Get Covered Alaska.
For the second time in its history, the Iditarod Trail Sled Dog Race will begin in Fairbanks, though race officials still plan to hold the ceremonial start in Anchorage. Last night, the Iditarod Trail Committee's Board of Directors voted unanimously to move the start of the race from Willow. Stan Hooley, CEO of the Iditarod Trail Committee, says the decision was made after board members observed potentially dangerous areas on the trail by helicopter. Last year, poor snow conditions led to broken sleds and injured mushers. Aaron Burmeister, who sits on the Iditarod Trail Committee board, was one of those injured in the 2014 race. Stan Hooley says the overall length of the 2015 Iditarod will be about 19 miles shorter than usual as a result of the changes, but that won't necessarily make it easier on mushers and dogs.
The first part of this race will see longer distances between checkpoints than the traditional route.
Hooley says while mushers would generally prefer to race on the traditional Iditarod Trail, those he's spoken to accept the change. Lance Mackey is currently running in eighth place on the Yukon Quest Trail. He is the winningest musher in Yukon Quest history. The four-time champion is a cancer survivor, and as KUAC's Emily Schwing reports, the lifelong musher knows he can't run dogs the way he used to.
In the 2013 Yukon Quest, Lance Mackey made it as far as Pally Crossing. That year, the weather was too warm for his young dog team. They were sick, and he decided to scratch. This year, conditions are nearly the opposite, and Mackey's determined to cross the finish line.
I ain't going to let them down. You know, my fans, my friends, people like that, they might understand, but my dogs, they don't. You know, we started this, we're going to do everything we can to finish it, so.
But many of Mackey's competitors and some of his fans have voiced concern about whether he can handle extreme cold, exposure, and tough trail. Even he says his body isn't holding up the way it used to.
You know, I don't know what my future holds in these long-distance races, but it looks like it's going to be more and more challenging, and that's going to give me more and more satisfaction if I get to the end of this thing.
For Mackey, retirement may be a four-letter word, but he does say his priorities in racing have changed.
I did my time. I achieved my goals, and now it's just about being in the sport as long as possible because I do love it, and I don't know what else the hell I would do. You know?
This is Mackey's seventh Yukon Quest. He's never finished lower than third place, and with more than 500 miles of trail ahead, the former champion still has plenty of opportunity to claim a spot in the top 10. On the Yukon Quest Trail, I'm Emily Schwing in Dawson City.
The Denali Borough Assembly considers a resolution tonight urging the state legislature to create a Stampede State Recreation Area near Healy. As KUAC's Tim Ellis reports, it's the latest attempt to push the proposal with state legislators.
The most recent version of legislation to create the Stampede Rec Area would designate 88,000 acres of state land west of Healy in the northeast corner of Denali National Park for that use. Denali Citizens Council President Hannah Raglan says it would protect the area and local and traditional uses ranging from berry picking to off-roading.
The rec area was chosen because of the range of recreational activities that are allowed. People can still fish, can still hunt, can still trap.
Raglan says state management is also needed to limit damage to the Stampede Trail and other areas, like the abandoned bus made famous by Christopher McCandless and the Into the Wild book and movie about his wanderings into the Stampede.
We see people from all around the world out there all year now, walking, skiing. Winter, spring, summer, fall.
The Citizens Council has gotten lawmakers to introduce bills to create the Stampede State Recreation Area in each of the last three legislative sessions. The measures haven't gone anywhere, but group members were more optimistic about its chances this year.
A lot of us here were pretty excited to see that we had a local Healy resident that was elected to represent us in Juneau.
Raglan says the election of former Denali Borough Mayor and Stampede Rec Area supporter Dave Tallarico to the State House raised optimism among supporters. But Tallarico says since his election, it's become clear that any proposal requiring any additional state spending will probably be dead on arrival.
With the budget concerns that we have for this year, I would say there will be a lot of things that will be put on hold for the time being, just due to the fact of the expense involved.
Raglan says the rec area would pretty much support itself through user fees. But Tallarico cites other issues beyond cost, including opposition by the Alaska Miners Association and Yusubeli Coal Mine. A Yusubeli spokeswoman says the company is concerned the rec area would create regulatory obstacles to its plans to explore for natural gas in the Stampede. Raglan says the most recent version of the legislation preserves Yusubeli's exploration leases and continued mining operations. In Delta, I'm Tim Ellis.
NPR's Tiny Desk concert series has become anything but tiny since its inception in 2008. And this year, the series began a contest open to all, where the winner gets to travel to NPR in Washington, D.C. to play a concert at the Tiny Desk. The contest received more than 7,000 entries, including 17 from Alaska. KTOO's Scott Burton spoke with All Songs Considered host Bob Boylan and has this story.
Here's Boylan introducing the first ever Tiny Desk concert in 2008.
So we're going to videotape this for our blog, and maybe it's the start of something and maybe it's not, but we're certainly glad to have Laura Gibson here today. Thank you for doing this.
Up with sunrise, you'll be staring out through the window on the day.
Almost 7 years later, the series has over 400 performance videos on its website. Boylan had no idea.
I never really thought that it would go much beyond a little novelty thing that we did now and again.
The name Tiny Desk Concert is a double entendre that references Boylan's old psychedelic band, the Tiny Desk Unit, and that artists literally play at his desk. He says the series was a success from that first video.
The series spoke to people. The moment we put Laura Gibson online in a video form, the reaction we got to that very video, because of its intimacy, connected on a level I didn't really expect.
You'll be the first to spin your story. I'll be the last to let you go. Tell me you'll always go.
Fast forward 7 years through concerts by Pat Benatar, T-Pain, Trey Anastasio, Nickel Creek, Nico Case, Lyle Lovett, Wilco, Steve Earle, and hundreds more, and add a twist.
Yes, there's a contest, and wonderful, there's going to be a winner, but the most important wonderful thing is for people and friends to get together and make something. That is, you know, that's the value of art. It's a value of community, and so that's what we wanted to inspire.
Juneau-based musician Marion Call, who also happens to be a KRNN DJ, couldn't agree more. Call, the Woolpullers, who we're listening to now, and George Kuhar performed at a house concert in Juneau where three video entries were recorded for the contest.
I'm anti-contests in general, but I felt like this one both had a good prize, a good mechanism, and was good for everyone, even in the entering. You know, it wasn't exclusive, it wasn't dangling money, it wasn't dangling a record contract, it was just about, you know, performing in a venue that all of us have always wanted to perform in, right? But then, even better than that, they gave us an excuse to create our own space that felt like a Tiny Desk concert and claim it, you know? So now 5,000 people have claimed a little stake of their own Tiny Desk world, and I think that's exactly the best possible outcome. More art was born.
A sleep mute and Anchorage-based musician named Emma Hill also made some new art.
One of the very first videos I watched was a woman named Emma Hill, and she did a song about Denali. She did a song just dedicated to her home, you know, and the thing that she loves, and it's a beautiful song. She did with a banjo player who had the most fantastic-looking banjo. It was like this refraction paper, psychedelic-looking banjo. They both sat on little tiny chairs but next to a little tiny table, and it was delightful. I loved it.
Boylan will announce the winner on NPR's Morning Edition tomorrow. He says the choice was difficult and meant a lot of long nights at the Tiny Desk reviewing videos. Ultimately, he says the winner's talent and charisma is undeniable. But who really cares about winners? It's about the creation of new art, right? In Juneau, I'm Scott Burton.
The best in Costa Rica.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org, and you can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Matthew Smith in Nome, Jay Barrett in Kodiak, Philip Manning in Talkeetna, Emily Schwing on the Yukon Quest Trail, Tim Ellis in Fairbanks, and Scott Burton in Juneau. APRN's Alexander Gutierrez reported from Juneau, and Liz Ruskin from Washington, D.C. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Laurie Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Alaska Premier Dental Group, offering dental innovations from implants and Invisalign with 3 offices, 2 in Anchorage and 1 in Wasilla. Description of services at smilealaska.com. If you're ready to quit tobacco, Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line can help with free confidential coaching and support services through the telephone and online. Now introducing Text to Quit, a way to help you use medications correctly, manage urges, and prevent relapse all from your mobile phone. Call 1-800-QUIT now or visit alaskaquitline.com for more information. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Prevention and Control Program. Artist, show us how you inspire Alaska. Apply now for an individual artist award. The deadline is March the 1st. Learn more at rasmussen.org/IAA. This message sponsored by Rasmussen Foundation.
Want to know more about how you and your family may get help buying health care coverage or avoid a tax penalty? Go to getcoveredak.org or call 211. This message sponsored by the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium, a nonprofit health organization.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.